back to Heat Wave Sports. Here's Tim Unglesby and Tom Barton.
Hour two, Heat Wave Sports, Fox Sports Radio. 1 week away from the big game, and next Saturday night's show, starting at 10 o'clock, Heat Wave Sports will be live from the Beer Park at the Paris Hotel and Casino. Tom, we're going to be out there live doing our annual big game preview, and it's probably, by far, it's the most fun that we have all year long because it's basically it's like the reunion of sorts, right, Tom? You get something, somebody, anyone associated with the show usually shows up, and we get them on the air to give their thoughts on the big game.
Yeah, absolutely. The big game, you know, you keep saying the big game. I think we're allowed, I won't say it, but I think we're allowed to say the word. I think here's the rules. And everybody keeps going, wait, big game. The law passed years ago that you can't profit off of the SB by saying the term SB. You can't profit off of it. So you can't advertise and use it. I can't really put it out there for my bar, for example. But I don't think we're profiting off of it, so I think we can say the actual name, and we don't have to say big game.
That's correct, because I'm really, like, big and paranoid about this kind of thing and over the years, so I did a lot of research. And, yeah, as long as that's what I read several times, is that as long as you're not profiting or promoting something specific other than the actual event, that's what I'm told. So.
The hell with it, then, the Super Bowl preview show.
Right? Yeah. That's just how I think that I've interpreted the rules, Tim. So I know you keep saying big game, and I know we're trying to be cautious, but I think we're allowed to say Super Bowl.
So here's actual good comparison. Tonight, for all you wrestling fans, the Royal Rumble took place. And you know, Tom, in the Royal Rumble, sometimes they have these surprise entrants that return.
Yeah, don't give a spoiler, man.
No. Just going to use it as an example. Because Saturday night is always a surprise returnee, and who could it be this year? You know, I have already confirmed for the event, former producer Armando Vasquez will be in the building.
Nice.
Wonderful listener Steve Roy will be down at the Beer Park. Big C-Win special is going to tell us who he bet on so we can bet the other way. He'll be at the Beer Park next Saturday. How about this one?
We could run the other way.
How about this one? One of the original hosts of Heatwave Sports, Ronald Natty, in attendance.
Nice.
It's going to be crazy. Fernando, we've seen Fernando in the past. We've seen Patrick Herbert. A lot of guys over the years that have supported the show always come out to support us as well. So it is an open invitation, Tom. Anybody listening, please come down and watch the show live. It's a big show. We have fun, but in all seriousness, we really do break the game down pretty well, and we get a consensus prediction.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, it's going to be one of those situations where the next day, you know, you hold people's feet to the fire, right?
Yes.
If somebody comes out there and they're jumping up on their soapbox and they're telling you, Brady's going to lose, he's going to lose, he's going to lose, and he goes out there and he wins again, it's an opportunity to hold that person's feet to the fire, right? So that's my favorite thing, is the prediction. You know, if somebody says, well, you know what, it's going to be a close game, we're not going to hold them to it. But in the past, we've had, there's no way this is happening, and then it happens, and you can't back up from it. We're in sports talk radio, man. You got to live or die by your predictions. You know, live and die by your takes. So it's a good way to get everybody together and kind of start the melee, right?
Yes. I've thrown the invite out to Nick Nice, who you worked with last night. Ari Platten will be in studio running the board. And he's running over here because he wants to say something about this. Ari, I did extend that olive branch to you because last year you had to sit out. I said, Ari, come hang out with us at the Beer Park, man.
I like it here at the studio. A. B, there's really no one. I mean, you either get Nick on premise or you know, he's covering for me. So
Bobby Machado is not making an appearance.
Nah, okay. Unfortunately. But, yeah, no, I'm there in spirit. I'm there pressing the buttons.
Okay.
You know, I'll shut you guys down if things get a little crazy.
And you'll keep us on if things, yeah.
While things are good.
Right,
yeah.
Right. Okay.
Yeah, that's all I wanted to say. Carry on.
Two more.
I gotta tell you that, guys, the sights at Beer Park are pretty nice, too.
Yes.
I've heard good things about it. I feel like I was there a long, long time ago, but I can't quite remember.
Are you talking about the sights of the Strip, or are you talking about sights of the, yeah.
But Well, you make it out to be whatever you need to. I'm just saying.
What a salesman.
Right.
Visual aids from the deer park are very nice.
Yeah. Two more confirmations, and we'll get going with some basketball. Out of Lions host Brian Feldman making an appearance. And Tom, you're going to love this one. Ballpark Frank Harnish coming to see us, man.
That's fantastic. Tell Frank I want to talk about the Islanders hockey with him.
He will. Trust me. He'll do it.
Oh, I know. I want to, before we move on here, Tim, I want to mention one quick thing. Because I said something, and I don't like to throw things out without statistics to back it up, but I was talking to you guys about Gronkowski, who you said is 49.5 and 3.5, right? And I think a lot of people are going to be loading up. Here's Gronkowski working backwards from week 17. 2 catches, 24 yards. 0 catches, 0 yards. 2 catches, 21 yards. Huge game against Miami. 8 catches, 107. 3 catches, 26. 3 catches, 56. 3 catches, 43. 3 catches, 97. That goes back to week 6. Now, if you go back to... Now, remember, he missed a game at Chicago, missed a game with Green Bay, missed a game at Tennessee, okay? So, if you go back to week 12, that's after he missed those games. Catches, 338202. Yardage, 56, 26, 107, 21, 0, 24. Just to back up what I'm saying, guys, you know, he's not catching. He's got one game since Thanksgiving, where he's caught more than 3 passes. You know, you look at Gronkowski and you say, yeah, it your snap reaction is, well, Gronk's going to have a big game. Gronk's going to catch 4 balls, right? Again, he caught 6 balls last week, right? He definitely caught 6 balls, went to 79 yards. But he caught 3 of them on the final drive. 3 of them on the final drive. The playoff game before that against the Chargers, 1 catch for 25 yards. The dangerous situation, and the numbers are not with you if you're going over on Gronkowski.
Only thing I have to say about that, Tom, is, okay, so he gets a week to rest, right? We know that that helps. Obviously it helps, but I heard from a good reliable source that Barry Bonds paid a visit to Gronk this week and offered him a good chronic pain medication. It's called the Clear. I don't know if you've heard of that. I heard that's in the mix, so he might be a new man come Sunday.
Well, think about it like this. If there's ever a time to take it, right?
Right.
Wouldn't it be if you think you're going to retire on the Super Bowl?
Right.
If there's ever a time to take it, yeah, you take it the Friday before and see what happens.
There's nothing they can do about it, right?
No, not at all. It'll tarnish his legacy.
Oh.
Yeah, well, not like people won't come up with random things to not like Gronk about anyway.
I'm sure if the legacy needed to be tarnished, it was the pay-per-view he had when he was on that cruise ship, so... You know, that would be something to tarnish the legacy, right?
Yeah, except somehow or another that boosted him up.
Yes. Oh, we loved it. That he was even more of a hero to me at that point. So. All right, Tom. We got to, you know, Tuesday night at the Thomas and Mack's big game for the Mountain West. It's only big in terms of that, if for me, it's a state thing, right? It's the best in town, best in the state, and it's a rivalry that UNLV has dominated for many, many years, up until the last 5 years where Nevada has taken this over, including a sweep last year of UNLV. And I remember 2 years ago in Marvin Menzies' first season, their victory over Reno, that was like their NCAA title game when they were able to knock off Reno at that time. But this Tuesday night, the 7th-ranked Wolfpack come to town with Eric Musselman, 6-1 in the Mountain West, Tom. They're 19-1 overall. Win Tuesday will give them 20 wins already on the season. The Rebels will come into this game limping after basically an ass-whipping over at San Diego State on Saturday, 94-77. They fall to 11-8. They're 5-2 in the conference, a game behind Nevada. I don't think UNLV is... I don't think the Wolfpack of Nevada are coming into this game taking UNLV lightly.
No, I don't think so either. And I spent over an hour on UNLV last night because there's such a mirage going on right now on both sides. I've listened to the arguments. I've listened to the pro-UNLV people this year, well there, you know, before last night. Well, they're 11-7, right? Oh, man, they're looking good. They're doing better than most people thought. They won 5 of 6. All very true. All very true. It's hard to argue with that proponent. But it was also, all right, let's be honest and let's look ahead, because they have the bulk of their road games coming up. That's a problem, since they can't go on the road. They're playing the good teams now coming. Last night, I told you, I think they're going 4-7 in the last 11, mm-hmm. which you get them right about 15 wins, which would be almost, I think, to the number what we predicted, what I predicted. So I get the proponents of the people that are pro-UNLV. But I also, you know, tell you, listen, you got to look ahead. You have to not live in this glass case of well, 11-8. What do you really think that this UNLV team really is with that front-loaded schedule? Do you really believe that they are an 11-8 team that can win, you know, 18-19 games? You can't think that. You just can't think that. And then you have the haters, Tim. And on the haters' side, I disagree with them too. The adamant haters can't see that this team is better than they were supposed to be. Now, will that fall apart? Yeah, I agree with them. I do. I think that this will fall apart. I think it is going to come crashing down, 100%. But right now, it's not. Right now, it's not crashing down. Right now, you have to look at what they are doing. Going out there and losing in the manner that they did lost every bit of good feeling for UNLV. If they had won that game, Tim, and they come into Nevada, and they get crushed by Nevada, what do you say? All right, no problem. We're not a top 25 team in the country. We lost. Okay. But look at what we've done. But now if you lose back-to-back games and likely get crushed back-to-back games, it kind of dampens the feeling. It's hard to be somebody that is finding positives now in a UNLV season. So last night I said, I love to do this with you. Last night I said, you know, I'm going to take a shot here. I'm going to guess the spread. But I guessed it in the point of how many points do I have to get to be tempted to take UNLV? And I said, I would need more than 15. I would need 15 plus points to think about taking UNLV. I don't even know if I would take them plus 15, but I would think about taking UNLV plus 15. So what would I have to take Nevada? I'm taking Nevada if they're 9 points or less, I think. 8 points, probably. 8.5 or less. I don't even really love that 9 number. So that tells you kind of where they live. I went out, I took a shot. I don't know what the line is. I don't have it in front of me. I went out and I took a shot, and I said, I think the line's going to be 9.5, 10, something along those areas. As the show went on, and I started to think about it, the more I started thinking about it, it might be like 10.5 or 11. So, you know, I want to get your take. What do you think the line's going to be, and how many points do they have to give you for you to think about starting to take UNLV? Yeah.
I'm with you. I think it'll be right around 10, 9 or 10. I think that's a fair line. And I can't take the points unless I'm getting at least 12, Tom. 12 or 13, I think, may pursue, push me in the right direction. I just don't know if I can bet the Rebels. That's the problem here. But I think we'll see right around 10. 9 to 10, I think you're right.
Yeah, you know, that's the thing. I mean, it's where do you get tempted to say, well, I got to take this team? And to me, I get tempted at 15, which, yeah. You know, you talk all you want, Rebel fans, about how good of a season is. I think that right there speaks of your reality, that you are not really considered on your home floor 15 points within the best team in the conference.
No, I agree 100%. And this, you know, you look at what have we done recently, and the Rebs embarrassed at Air Force, embarrassed at San Diego State. You just mentioned it. They can't play away other than the win at New Mexico, I think you saw. Whereas Nevada had a little hiccup against New Mexico, and they've seemed to run that back the correct way. They get a close win against Boise. But they're coming off a 40-point rout at Colorado State, or against home against Colorado State. Rebels coming off a game that they were just totally outplayed there at San Diego State. And that's what I mean about Musselman and Nevada. I don't think it's a situation here where they're underestimating UNLV. And I think that point's been known. And when I look at who can step up for these teams, right? And I look at who can be the stars. Reno has a three-headed monster there in the Martin twins and Jordan Caroline that, you know, they were all hitting on cylinders the other night against Colorado State. But two of them playing normal games, two of them playing their normal games, Tom, is enough to beat the Rebs.
Yeah, to that last night, like, who are you going to stop? Or who do you even try to stop? And I will say, I think it's been – this is a weird dichotomy because I will repeat, and I got a little bit blasted for this. I will repeat what I said last night. I am not overly impressed with Nevada this year, okay? But that's not to say that they didn't earn 19-1. That's not to say that I didn't expect them to be in this position. I'm just not overly, you know, sitting back and saying this is a Final Four team. And that's where the expectations come in, and we discuss this all the time on the air, Tim. In a vacuum, is Nevada a good team? Yeah, in a vacuum, they're a great team this year. But when you set out before the season, you tell me that Nevada is a top five team. I haven't seen that on the court. I haven't seen a top five team on the court. I don't see them, you know, being a Final Four team. But that can change the second half of the year. Teams that have a hiccup, okay, I'm okay with the New Mexico hiccup. I really am. I'm not basing it on that. I'm basing it on the overall body of work. But I do think that there is something to be said about Musselman knowing his schedule, knowing when he's got to step up, knowing when he's got to kind of put the foot on the gas, and knowing when he's got to drive it home. I think this is one of those games. This very well could be that statement game for Nevada where, yeah, we're 19-1, but watch what we do on the road at UNLV. Watch this. And this could be one of those statement games. They're going to – every competitive top 20 team or so has one or two of them during the year, and that's when you start to awaken and you go, wow, oh, man, maybe I've been overlooking this team. Even though they're ranked in the top 20, you kind of overlook that team. This is their statement. Or it certainly can be. Not because UNLV is good, but because people are kind of sleeping on what Reno is right now. They're sleeping on them because it's a bad schedule and from a bad conference. But you go out there and you go on the road and you spank them the way that they need to spank them. You put this Air Force team put up 106 on them. They put up 94. I mean, would it shock anyone to watch Nevada put up 100? I don't think they do. I think this is more of a defensive game. But would it shock me? No. And I said it. Only one team since very early in the season, Tim, put up more than 71 points on Nevada. Only one team all year outside of, you know, that back-to-back, head-to-head situation where they were, you know, in a tournament. After that, one team. I don't see UNLV cracking into that 75 or 80, and if you don't get to past 71 points, you have no prayer in this game.
That's the thing. When you look at the schedule for Nevada, play defense. They play defense, but they can score. So you have almost, Tommy, almost an old-school UNLV format here where they have guys that can put the ball in the basket and they can turn around and play DU up. And I think when you look at just from a national landscape, and we can jump into this, for instance, the teams that are ahead of Reno in the rankings, and I'm going to say from the top, right? Tennessee, Duke, Virginia, Gonzaga, and then the Michigans, State, and you. Are they better than Nevada? I would initially say probably I would think that they are. I think all seven of the or six of those are better, but that doesn't mean I don't think Nevada can upset one of them in a tournament-style format, especially as it gets later in the tournament, because I think it comes down to coaching. I like Musselman. I think he's a good coach, and I think that's a situation where they could come up and surprise one of them. Could they do it and get all the way through and win it? I don't know, Tom, because I think eventually some of these coaches are smart enough to slow it down, and if it gets into a low scoring game and they can't score, anything happens at that. And another perfect example is the teams under him. We saw him today, Kentucky and Kansas play. Those are teams that I think Nevada would also have problems with. So I think that, you know, when you look at the top 10, I can see them being slotted in there, and I can see him possibly pulling it off an upset, but I don't think they can beat Zaga, Virginia, Duke, Tennessee. I don't think that they can get that far. It's just going to come down to where the brackets lay.
Well, you know me. Every year I explain, you know, what I liked and what I don't like about the tournament and how I feel and whatnot. And one of my big contributing factors why I love the ACC every year is because I like the gauntlet, Tim. Mm-hmm. I like the teams. And we see it with Syracuse all the time, right? You have Syracuse, the team that everyone's going, oh, yeah, they are. Syracuse, yeah, they stink this year. They're all right. And I go, wait a minute. They go through the gauntlet, right? And Nevada doesn't have that. And I think that that's going to burn them even more. They don't know how. All year long, Tim, Nevada will never play a back-to-back game against tough opponents, ever. Not all year. So their first time they will ever play back-to-back tough opponents will be, you know, even not even in round one this year. Got to figure they get a two seed, okay? So you got to figure, slot them in as a two seed, maybe a three seed, two or a three seed. That's not a tough game. So you're talking about the next weekend, weekend two, being the tough weekend, and now you're playing pretty good teams, and they've never played back-to-back good teams all year, and now they have to do it with one day rest. This is where I think the smaller conferences, especially a team like Nevada, get burned. And we talk about, you talk about tournament time and, you know, how the tournament shakes out. I am a massive believer in the lower conferences. You guys know that. You've heard my Belmont spiel, right? I'm on Stony Brook and Hofstra making a fortune this year. You've heard me go out there and talk about Vermont and whatnot, but you don't hear me ever picking them to go too far in the tournament because of that reason. Because it's very difficult for a team that doesn't face tough back-to-back competition to all of a sudden rise to the fact of let's go and let's have back-to-back competition. Just a difficult situation, and I think that that's where Nevada is up against it. You take this Nevada team, and you, like you said, can they upset a team or two? Sure. But you're talking about the gauntlet. Where do I see them going? I mean, do you think that Nevada is a Sweet 16 team? Okay. All right. I could buy that. Do I think they're an Elite Eight team? Probably not. Do I think they're a Final Four team? Absolutely not. I mean, that's where I look at Nevada, and maybe I'm sour on them a little bit there, more than I should be. I know people are loving them. I just don't see it. I think you've got to go through at least a small gauntlet of teams and get challenged. And get challenged back to back.
Right. If there are two, they get a 7 in the second round, right? 7-10. So if they get through that, the opening matchup in the second week of the tournament is against a 3 seed, Tom.
That's right. Kind of my point. That second weekend is going to be, you know, where it's figured out. And maybe with the time off, maybe they can even win that first game, but I don't think they win that second game. And it's the adjustments. I mean, Musselman's a very, very good coach. I get that. But it's that adjustment period, Tim. It's that adjustment period of, okay, now we have, you know, less than 48 hours to get ready for the next game. And they've never had to do that. They've never gone through a tough game, had to come out on the other side and play another tough team, or a tough game and then come out on the other side and play a better team. You know, and there are situations where it's just gonna hurt. I mean, think about, just completely off the top of my head right now, Tim, okay? Think about who would be that 7 seed, okay? Which even that I think is going to be tough. Who's going to be sitting in that 7 seed? I mentioned Syracuse, Virginia Tech. Those are the teams that are kind of going to be sitting around that 7 seed. You know, you look at the next round, or even you want to go even further, a Maryland team, your Maryland team, will maybe be the next round as a 3. But you're looking at Maryland as a 3. Maybe you're looking at a team like Texas Tech as a 3. Maybe you're looking at a team like Louisville, or even the Tar Heels as a 3. You think that Nevada, you know, against North Carolina, and then 2 days later facing Maryland, you think they're going to go through that gauntlet? I just don't see that.
When we come back, we're going to look at some of the top teams in the nation. I want to get Tom's thoughts on Tennessee. Great, great story. When does it fall apart for the Volunteers? And Mr. Zion, where's he going to be playing next year in the NBA? And of course, it's a great segue so Tom can talk about his man, James Harden, also on the other side of the break. Heatwave Sports, Fox Sports Radio, 98.9 FM. Back after this.
Hey, everyone. This is Carrie Walsh Jennings, and you are listening to Heatwave Sports on Fox Sports Radio.
Now back to Heat Wave Sports with Tim Oglesby and Tom Barton.
Throwing up the four here in the Lotus Broadcast Studios. All right, Tom. Top 25 rankings. We agree on how rankings are, but Tennessee Volunteers, 16-1. Cute story this year, isn't it, Tommy? It's cute.
It's cute. I agree. That's a great word for it. It's hard to take away what Tennessee's done. Mm-hmm. I mean, they certainly have the resume to be number one. And I agree with them being number one on the basis of, they beat Louisville. Their only loss was to Kansas, in a neutral site game. They've beaten Gonzaga already. It is a cute story, though, because the reality is they haven't played their SEC road games yet. South Carolina's coming up on the road. They haven't done that yet. Still haven't got to Kentucky. Still haven't got to LSU. Still haven't got to Ole Miss. Still haven't got to Auburn. So you're talking about in the SEC right now, after Tennessee, who are the best teams? Who are the best teams in the SEC? Well, number two would be Kentucky. Number three would be Auburn. Number four would be Mississippi State. Number five would be LSU. They have Kentucky twice. They've got to go on the road to all five of them, and even South Carolina on Tuesday. They've got to go on the road to all of them. So, again, it's almost to say, look, I want to show you that I'm not picking on you and I'll be here, guys. It's the same thing. When you look at Tennessee's schedule and you look at what they've done, you go, yeah, 18-1, that's fantastic. Wow, they're doing some good things. They got a good resume. But, uh-oh, we got to go play all five of the next best five teams in the SEC, all five of them on the road. Also got to play Florida again. Also got to play two games against Kentucky, two games against South Carolina. Their bulk of their schedule is ahead.
They barely survive Vanderbilt. They barely survive Bama. Barely survive Florida. Missouri. Well, Missouri, they washed out Missouri. But you look at games where here recently they've done enough to win, right, Tom? Let's put it that way. And I think the resurgence in the program, it's a great story to follow. And I think, I'm not looking at a necessarily a opening weekend exit in the tournament, but I can see them Sweet 16 and out. I mean, that's a very good possibility. And I think if you're a Tennessee Volunteer fan, you have to be happy with that.
Yeah, that's the thing. I mean, it is the don't set your expectations too high. I do not believe, even for a second, that even Tennessee fans believe that this team is the best team in the country. I don't believe that they think that they're holding on to the number one seed for too long, right? I mean, I would be stunned, absolutely stunned, if we're sitting here in 2 weeks and Tennessee's still number one. I just don't think it's going to happen. I actually, I don't even know if I would put them in my top five right now, Tim. But that doesn't mean that they can't have a good tournament and a good season and you chalk it up. But I do think that they're going to fall off the cliff and fall off the cliff pretty hard, pretty quick.
Well, then there's Duke, right, Tom? Number two, 17-2, excuse me. Tough loss to Gonzaga. We just saw them here recently squeak out a win over Virginia. And those two teams, when they always play, seems to be good basketball games. And the talk is Zion, but Barrett, for me, when you look at possibly the guys that are playing at the next level, Barrett unbelievable this year, along with Zion Williamson.
Yeah, everybody's talking about Zion. Yes, absolutely. But the key to this team to me is Jones. I mean, Jones is absence makes this a completely different team. And just to get into the next team on the list, while I'm talking about Duke, I said it last night. I mean, I gave you my thoughts last night. I think Virginia, even with the loss, is better than Duke. They went on the road to Duke and lost by two. And by the way, have to look at how the schedule sets up. This is where you look at a team like Virginia, and I think Virginia is hands down the best team in the country. You look at how they went into that Duke game, okay? And let me just set it up for you here to back my point up that they are the better team than Duke. They played Florida State, who was ranked 9 at the time. I know, forget about where they are now. Think about the mindset. You played Florida State, ranked 9 in your own building, beat them by 10. Then you went on the road to Boston College, destroyed them. On the road to Clemson, destroyed them. At home against a top 10 team in the country, in your rival Virginia Tech, destroyed them. Then you played Duke. They had a rough go of it. Two true road games, your rival days before going to Duke, and you went to Duke and you were within a basket. Now you come back, and this is why I like Virginia. By the way, the Cavs are the number one covering team in America. This is why I like Virginia. Because after the Duke game, I look for the bounce back. What they do? Destroyed Wake Forest and then humiliated Notre Dame on Saturday. Humiliated. And you look at their schedule coming up, you know, there's nobody on their schedule I don't think that they could beat, especially at the end of the year. Game against NC State's coming up at NC State. Hey, look, they're better team. They should win that game. Then they get Duke at home Saturday, or next two Saturdays, you know, February 9th. They get Duke at home. But they have a week to prepare for that. That is going to shift the rankings there. At North Carolina, that could be a dangerous game. At VTech could be a dangerous game. But the last, listen to the last ending of their schedule. Georgia Tech home, Pittsburgh home, at Syracuse, Louisville home. I mean, there's no easy outs in the ACC, but as favorable as the schedule was, or as unfavorable, I should say, as the schedule was when they played Duke the first time, they're going to get a full week to prepare for Duke at home. Now, if you lose that game to Duke, Tim, there's no argument. Duke's the better team. Duke's the number one overall seed. You know, Virginia will probably still be a one, but you had to do, and you lost the ACC, okay? But if you win that game, I think it very well speaks to the idea of Virginia is the better team.
You know, we've seen over the – I think they've been the better team or the best team in the country a few times in the last 4 or 5 years, and they've always struggled in advancing past the Sweet 16. I think they got past it one time a couple years ago. And in fact, you know, as you know, last year, bouncing the first round – you know, is that something that when you look at a Virginia team until they do it, it's a team that's maybe they're the best team in the country, Tom, but you don't pencil them in your bracket as much anymore?
Not me, Tim. I'm the idiot that keeps putting them in the Final Four year after year. I have money on them to win the whole thing this year. I got 10-1 odds on them to win the whole thing this year. You know, I pick them, and I pick Syracuse. Syracuse is my big long shot. Virginia's a team I picked to win. I can't learn my lesson. I don't know why. Virginia's that team for me. I just can't learn my lesson. It used to be that they didn't have enough scoring. Well, they have enough scoring now. And this is the year, Tim. We talked about it with the Saints after they lost to Minnesota. We just talked about it in hour one with New England. And they lost last year. I said coming in, and I have made a lot of money on Virginia this year. I said coming in, I think that this is going to be the year where Virginia just absolutely dominates people. Because no better motivation than being the laughingstock in the history of college basketball. How can you get rid of that laughingstock label? I mean, if they go to the Final Four, that doesn't do anything, does it, Tim?
Right.
But if they go, you can change the narrative. The narrative will always be UMBC went in and beat a 16-1 for the first time in history. But if Virginia comes back and wins a national championship this year, what is that statement followed by, Tim? Everybody for eternity will say, oh, my God, can you believe a 16-1 and then next year that number one came back and won a title? It will be seamless. That's the way you fix a narrative in sports. And I don't think for one second that Tony Bennett doesn't know that. He doesn't know, guys, we were embarrassed. We are the laughingstock. For the rest of our lives, we'll be the laughingstock of college basketball, a 16 losing to a 1. It will be all the talk forever. We are the 16 that lost to a 1. But if we come back and we win a championship this year, if we can do that this year, all of a sudden it's 16 lost to a 1, oh, but they came back and won the next year. And that will be seamless for everybody. And I think he knows that. I really do.
So jumping back to Duke real quick, Tommy. Look, Zion, this is all, of course, hinging on the announcements that these kids will declare early and play at the next level and enter themselves in the NBA draft. But Zion Williamson is the projected number one pick. pick in the 2019 NBA draft. And you know, right now it's a battle between the Cavs, the Suns, the Bulls, and the Knicks. Is the rumor mill in New York, is this what they want? Zion Williamson in New York, right, Tommy? This is going to change the Knicks' future. And, this is the beginning of the new run of the New York Knicks, Zion Williamson.
Well, it's not only Zion Williams. Yes, you're right. It completely. And I kind of spoke on this last night. There are four teams that are in the mix for Zion Williams. Two of them are good for basketball. Two of them are not good for basketball. New York is all about Zion Williams. But here's the other thing. With Zion, people are just expecting now that Kevin Durant is going to make a real effort to come to New York. It's not a hope and a dream. People are really going, he might really come here. This could happen. And you think about, look, if you're a basketball fan, I don't care if you hate the Knicks or like it. If you're a basketball fan, you want the Knicks to succeed. It's just good for the sport, okay? It really is just good for the sport. And if you turn around and you take Zion, Durant, and Porzingis, wow. All of a sudden, you have a team that you're not talking about, oh, that's cute, the Knicks are struggling for, you know, finally making the playoffs. Oh, that's cute. You know, maybe New York can make a little noise. You're going, oh, my God, what are they building over there? What kind of dynasty are they building? And that's how people are looking at Zion as that big of a difference maker. There are four teams that Zion can go to, Tim. I think two are good for basketball. Two are bad. And the Chicago Bulls are one. The Chicago Bulls, I don't think it's good for basketball for Zion to go there. We've watched the Bulls. First of all, Zion, as a fit in Chicago, he'll fit anywhere, okay? But he'll never be the guy there, right? He'll never be Michael. He'll never be that next. But you could say, okay, well, he could take the mantle. There's the argument. What does he have around him, though? The Bulls are so just depleted. He's got nothing around him. He's got nothing there. So Zion to Chicago, I don't think it's good necessarily for the sport. Zion to Cleveland, I think it's bad. Cleveland has nothing. They're a bare, barren cupboard. And again, can you say, yeah, he'll take the mantle and he'll run with it after LeBron. He's the new LeBron. But people will expect that. I think that's bad for the sport and bad for Zion. Yeah, the Knicks, obviously, is huge and great for him because the Knicks have so much money under the salary cap. They're going to go get one, maybe two free agents. And, oh, by the way, one of them might be Kevin Durant. And even if they don't, having a starting rotation of Zion and Porzingis all of a sudden is interesting. And then you have the team no one's talking about, Tim. That's Phoenix Suns.
Yeah.
Phoenix has some core going on, don't they? With Booker and what? I mean, they have a pretty decent young core going on. You throw Zion in the middle of those young guns, Phoenix is all of a sudden the team that people go, wow, Phoenix is an interesting team. So, I mean, he's going to land on one of those four. I think two are really good for basketball. Two are good for Zion. Two are not good for basketball. Two are not good for Zion.
I'm glad you brought the Suns up. I think it's taken them a little bit longer than they wanted to, Tommy, to get this going. But you're right. They're in a situation now where it almost reminds me of Minnesota. Just Minnesota never did it. You know what I mean? When they were building up the young guns there. And you talked about Booker, Ayton, Josh Jackson, Dragan Bender, Michael Bridges, all guys in their early 20s. You throw a Zion Williamson in there, and they could be the super team in the West. It really could happen. Or it could run the way that the T-Wolves did, Tommy. And we all know that really set that franchise back many, many years.
Yeah, and that's the thing. If you put too much stock into Zion, and this is, I'm talking to you Cavs, I'm talking to you Bulls, you put too much stock into Zion and you expect him, I'm sorry, I don't think he's a Zion hater. I think he's going to be very, very good. I don't think he has a LeBron-like effect where he could be a one-man team. I don't believe that he is that talent where he could walk in. Maybe he will be in 3 or 4 years, but I don't think he can walk in year one and you're going to, all of a sudden, the Cavs are going to go from the worst team in the league to a playoff team. I don't think that. I don't think he's got that kind of just universal talent, shall we call it. I don't believe that with Zion. But I will say this, Tim. You get him a little support, you got something incredible going on. So I'm real interested. I know that I've said this before about New York. New York is split in baseball, obviously leans to the Yankees. Split in football, obviously leans to the Giants. Split in hockey, obviously it leans to the Rangers. Basketball, it is 100% New York. And if this city ever got a winning New York team, it would be bigger than everything else because they've waited so long and so much of the city is 100% behind what they do. Zion is the perfect fit. I really believe that a lot of New York fans really, truly believe LeBron was going to pick New York. I do. I think they feel scorned, and they were kind of waiting for that. And now, all of a sudden, you have a shot at Zion and Durant, and you're starting to feel that the whispers come up.
And since we're talking NBA, James Harden, 40 points. Tom, today, as they defeat the Magic, 23 straight games, over 30 points. I know you want to talk about the MVP, James Harden.
Yeah, he's the MVP, but I don't know. I'm bored. Right? I'm not that impressed because Tim, they're now 6-4 of the last 10. Right? They're one game over 500 over the last 15, I think, or 14. You're scoring 61 points and 15 rebounds. And you're barely getting by the Knicks. You need a late shot to get past the Knicks. And you scored 61 and 15. I mean, teams are going after Harden, and they're using this against him. Now, Chris Paul's coming back, and I think they are going to adjust. But I don't know how long they can, and I don't know if Harden's going to be able to just flip the switch. I'm not sure that I see Harden just walking in here. I mean, Chris Paul walking in here and James Harden going, okay, that's enough for me. You know, I'm going to switch my whole game around. I think it's going to take some time. And you look at this Houston team and you look at what James Harden's doing, and then you go, yeah, they're mediocre in the West. They're a middle of the road team. They're a team that there's no threat. Is there any threat? They are with them to Golden State. Last year they were a better team. They were better last year without Harden doing all this ridiculous stuff. So, I get it from a personal performance standpoint. Great. But Timmy scored 265 just 2 games ago. 265 points in a 5-game span. Not one of them with an assist. Not one point, Tim, with an assist. I think that'll tell you that, he's not playing a team game. He's playing a James Harden game.
Yeah, no doubt. I think that he'll win the MVP, right? Although I believe I've heard in circles that he's not exactly the guy that they favor. So if someone like Giannis continues on with the way he's playing, that's a guy
that's
possibly
your MVP, by the way.
Right, he sneaks
he
in.
He
and
is
wins
the
it.
Most valuable player. Yeah.
And you see, and you mentioned it. I know they want to correlate it with the Chris Paul injury, but it wasn't like they were, they weren't under 500 without Paul there. So putting him back into this mix now after Harden's gone, 20-plus games of doing his own thing, I think there's an adjustment. It just may be an adjustment the wrong way.
Yeah, I'm not sure. It's hard for me to get all excited and all, love struck, for lack of a better term, over a Houston team that, lost a, what was it, 8 or 9 point lead with 50 seconds to go at home against the Nets and lost the game. Barely beat New York. I know it was a 10-point line, at the end. Look, they needed, with 2 minutes to go, that game was tied against the Knicks. Barely squeaked by Orlando at home. They're barely squeaking by teams that they should be crushing if Harden's throwing up 61 and 15.
Yeah. And we'll end the NBA segment on the Warriors, Tom. 10 in a row now, 35-14. And getting into playoff shape, right?
Yeah, they're gonna just hit the gas here. you're gonna start seeing them turn it up. I love the fact that, them against Boston was everything that it should have been. Stevens had a great quote afterwards. He said, you make one mistake, that's the difference. They beat you by a basket. And that's what happened. I mean, they beat them by two baskets, and it was one mistake. Real quick, Tim, we just had a tweet from Joe. He said, as a Bulls fan, I actually think they have a good core. Ben, Hutchinson, a little older Portis. Zion could be the missing piece. Joe, you know I love you. I completely disagree. The pieces that you mentioned are without that number two. But again, this isn't a knock on the Bulls. It's a knock on what I think of Zion. I think Zion is going to be a star in this league. I just don't believe that he's going to walk in and change the fortunes of a team. Yeah, I don't think he's going to be the guy to walk in and do that. I don't believe that Zion's an MVP candidate in the first 3 or 4 years. Can I put it that way? I think he walks in and he's getting MVP votes in the first 3 years. He's better designed early in his career, first couple of years, to have a running mate or to be the number two guy. I don't see that on the Bulls. Levine's a nice guy. They have nice players. Nice players. They don't even need a two. And that's who you need. You need that number two guy. Levine's a nice player. Dunn, Carter. Yeah, they're nice players. There's some depth there. But you need two. I don't think just Zion walks in and does it in Chicago, where I think just Zion can walk into New York, even if they don't get Duncan, walk in, and you go, Zion and Porzingis, that's a 1-2. Phoenix, you got Zion and Booker, oh, that's a 1-2.
Tom, give me your quick thoughts on Denver.
I like them, but it's the same story seemingly every year with Denver, right? They're only going to go, you're going to look good in at spurts, look very good at home. But I see a ceiling there.
Yeah, they're exciting to watch. They almost remind me, Tommy, of Portland about 2 or 3 years ago. And now you've seen Portland kind of change over the last couple of years with the way they've run their offense. And again, Portland, a playoff team, right? But I think Lillard's grown in as more of an NBA player than he was a couple of years ago. And I look at this team that in Denver. And there's no doubt. You want to score, they're going to score with you. But I think we see already seeing cracks in the shell.
Yeah, you got to. Unfortunately, they're in a conference team where you have to ask yourself, are they really a threat to Golden State? And my answer is no. I mean, 7-game series. Are you even giving Denver 2 games?
No.
Right, and that's the measure that you're in the West. That's your Western Conference measuring stick.
We are 2 in the books. That leaves hour 3 coming up here on a Super Sunday night. Tom and I are going to talk some Major League Baseball in hour 3. Still, no signings of Bryce Harper and Manny Machado, but a potential new suitor has made their names in the headlines. Tom and I have talked about this team previously. Is this just more rumor mill fodder, or is there actually a push behind this team and their opportunity to sign Manny Machado? We'll talk about that on the other side of the timeout. It's Heatwave Sports, Fox Sports Radio.